Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, July 13th, 1999. In the fireside room this afternoon is Bradley Hansen. Today's session is number 99-6 and is titled Lutheran Spirituality, Faith Development in Community. Let's listen in.
Hansen, and this is another one in a series on Lutheran spirituality. The subject today is Christian spirituality and the church. For those of you who may not have been here, but what I've done is to identify seven characteristics of Lutheran spirituality, and the sessions then have treated these various topics. The first one being the serious interpretation of the human condition. Then trust, this is the justification by grace as a matter of living it, I think. The primary reliance on the Word of God in words as the means of grace, but secondary attention also to physical symbols and sacraments. Now today we're talking about the fifth item here, participation in communal life of the church with responsibility for nurture of one another. So that's kind of just to orient you how we're fitting into the total scheme of things there. Now, this whole matter of Christian spirituality and church is somewhat controversial. You remember that there are some folks who will say, I'm very spiritual, but I'm not religious. And so that for them, religion tends to have a very negative, pejorative meaning. It tends to be identified then with a kind of dead institution. So they see spirituality as something very personal. Religion is something that belongs to church institutions, and therefore they see a big divide between spirituality and religion. I don't think that's necessarily the case at all. For some people that is the case, but it doesn't need to be that way at all. So, in any case, I think Lutheran spirituality is one of those that is clearly a communal spirituality, involves participation in the church. So we're going to talk about different aspects of that today. Some of the sociological studies done on church participation by a sociologist. One of them recently, and you see this in several studies, make a distinction between three groups of folks, and I would add a fourth actually, but the first being loyalists. Those are people who stay in the church kind of from their childhood on up, and they continue connected with the church. In a study of baby boomers, that is to say, people who were born, and baby boomers are often defined as those who are born between 1946 and 64. It's the baby boom, you know, because there were so many babies during that time. You had the post-war, and that's why it's called the baby boom. Well, a study done of that generation showed that about a third of the baby boomers were loyalists in relation to the church. So they just kind of stayed in all the way along the line. Others are what are called unaffiliated. At least at the time of the study, they were not connected with a church or other religious institution. Now, it appears, again, sociological study indicates that about half of Americans drop out of a religious institution for a period of 2 years or more. So dropping out is quite common. If about a half of the people are doing it. And of course, then there are returners. That is to say, those people who were in the church, dropped out, and then at some point later on in their life, come back. Now, I mentioned this perhaps the other day, but I'll repeat it. It was in George Gallup, Jr., the pollster. I heard him speak at a conference, and I asked him afterwards, what about baby boomers? Are they coming back to the church? He says, yes, And he says it's inevitable. What his language was, it's inevitable. Because now they're getting into the point where they're dealing with mortality. As you know, baby boomers, yeah, those born in 46, the oldest of the baby boomers are in their early 50s now, you see. And so some of those perennial human questions are having to be faced in a more serious way. So there are a number of those that are returning. And in fact, as you look at percentages of people who are affiliated or unaffiliated, by age, as the age goes up, the percentage of people who are unaffiliated with any religious institution declines as people get older. Now, I would add to this a fourth category, namely first-time joiners. People who grew up without any affiliation with a religious institution, and at some point then in their life, affiliate, get connected. And so they would be the first-time joiners. Now, in this, one of the interesting sociological studies was done on this that was published in 1992. Sociologists asked, well, what are the social factors that influence whether a person is affiliated or unaffiliated with the church? And family ties were most important in their what their findings were. And by family ties, they indicated three things. First of all, was a relationship with parents. If the person in the poll was close to his or her parents, that person was more likely to be a member of the church. If you had a more distant relationship with your parents, then you were more likely to be unaffiliated with the church. Again, it's not one-to-one, of course, but there's a kind of percentage there. A second factor was marriage, whether you're married or unmarried. Again, if you're married, you're more likely to be affiliated, the unmarried, less likely. And the third factor was having children, a child or children. That was, again, if you had a child, you were more likely to be affiliated. So those kinds of family connections then, relationship with parents, whether one is married or unmarried, and then thirdly, whether one has a child or not, are three factors which, if you are kind of on one side of those, you're more likely to be affiliated. If you have a distant relationship with your parents, are unmarried, and do not have any children, that then you're less likely to be affiliated with a church. Now, that makes a kind of sense when you think about it, because a church is a social institution. And what we're talking here about is kind of a connection with another kind of social institution, family. And so probably the greater degree that one is integrated into that family structure, then one is more likely to be integrated into a religious institution as well. So, in any case, one reason, or one factor we may say then that would influence church affiliation or unaffiliation are these kind of family factors, all right? Now, another factor that would play in here is one's own faith development. That is to say, where is one in one's own kind of process of developing in faith? And the person that has done the most study in this area and publishing in this area is a guy named James Fowler. He teaches at Emory University. He has been working on this stuff for probably a good 20 years, probably 25 years, and published a number of books and studies on this. And what Fowler has done is he distinguishes seven stages of faith development. Now, he studies faith development and talks about it principally not from the content of one's faith, but the manner in which one holds one's faith. Not the content, but the manner, the way in which one holds that faith. So that he would say that you could distinguish these seven stages of faith development, whether it's Christian faith, Buddhist faith, egoistic faith, faith in communism. You could still distinguish these different stages of faith. See, all right. Now, the ones that I thought we would be most pertinent in relation to participation in church would be stages 4, 5, and 6. So just talk about those briefly. Stage 4 is what he calls synthetic conventional faith. The synthetic doesn't mean that it's not genuine. It means that a person has made a kind of synthesis. This is a stage of faith that one is likely to enter in one's teens. So let's say from like age 13 on. And it's a stage of faith in which a person may remain for many years, maybe for one's entire life. Now, this form of faith is one that the person has reflected on matters of this faith and has kind of formed his or her own synthesis of it, all right? But it is also a conventional faith, by that meaning that the components of that faith are really drawn from significant others, members of the family, a close community. And the perhaps this is the most significant point here, is that a person with synthetic conventional faith hasn't yet stood outside his or her faith, kind of viewed it from a kind of critical perspective, but is kind of immersed within that community, within that faith. An example here from a Christian faith would be, say, a high school sophomore, let's say, a young woman who, she's read the Bible, she's heard the Bible stories about creation in 7 days. God created in 6 days and rested on the seventh day. But in her junior high, now in her 10th grade bio class, you know, there's a different kind of interpretation given to the development of things. And she may then work out a synthesis of those two by saying, well, the days that are talked about in the Bible are really not just a 24-hour day, but, you know, are long periods of time. All right? Now, that's a kind of synthesis that she's arrived at, and it allows her to kind of hold to that creation story, and yet also be able to affirm some of the things she's being taught in her science classes. All right? Now, it may happen, though, that a person will move toward a fifth stage, which Fowler calls individuative reflective faith. What causes this? Well, normally it's, or frequently, it's a movement away from home. So that going off to college, maybe going away to work, going off into a different culture, what that does is it takes you out of that kind of close-knit community of faith where there's lots of shared assumptions and convictions, and put you in a different context often where there's different faith convictions, and then you begin to look back at your faith and reflect on it more critically. You see, now you've kind of stepped outside of it. Or it can be, if it isn't something like that, a moving away, a going away, it can be a dramatic change in one's life. It can be a divorce. It could be a death if someone's very close to you. And this calls into question one's understanding of God. How could this happen? You see? Now, this then, what will happen is that, what may happen is that this it sets in motion then a process of reflecting on one's faith, asking questions about it. And so it's a reflecting, but now a kind of critical reflection on that. And it may then emerge in a new formulation of that faith, which will be able to address some of the concerns and questions that have been raised. If it's a divorce or a death, or if it's a move into a different faith community, well, how can you put these things together? Okay? So there's a kind of integrative process that will go on. That may take some years. In that process, for instance, like if you take the person, the young woman I said who put together the creation story with her, with her science, by saying, well, these 7 days are really, really just long periods of time, and therefore we could, you know, Genesis 1 and my science are really saying basically much the same thing. When she gets to college, she may get a much more deep exposure to thinking about how life forms develop through evolution. And this person then may say something like, well, maybe the biblical story is teaching certain truths about human life and the world and about God. And it isn't trying to be a description, a literal description of what kind of happened day by day, or step by step. And that's a way that you kind of can put the two together. Now, what can happen in that process, though, sometimes, is that there can be a kind of flattening out of the meaning of the religious symbols. And I'll give you an example of that. This is an example that is comes from a well-known theologian by the name of Harvey Cox, who has recently retired from Harvard Divinity School. Anyway, he tells in one of his books about an event that happened when he was a college student. I think he was just 18 years old. I think he was still in the last year of high school, and his girlfriend, who was a year older, his girlfriend was Catholic. Cox, I think, is American Baptist. Anyway, he went to Mass with his girlfriend. Went to the Catholic Mass with his girlfriend, right? Now, the girlfriend had taken an anthropology course at college. And so it comes to that point in the service where they're having the Eucharist. People are going up and receiving the Eucharist. The girlfriend leans over to Cox and whispers, "That's just a primitive totemic ritual, you know." Cox says, "What? A what?" She replied with great self-assurance, and I'm quoting from Cox, you know, "A primitive totemic ritual. Almost all pre-modern religious and tribal groups have them. They are ceremonies where worshipers bind themselves together and to the power of the sacred by a cannibalistic act of eating the manna of a dead god." Now, notice what's happened here, though. You see, you have, there is this sense of having understood. Now I understand what these folks are doing, you see. And she's sort of standing above here, you know. I really know what these people are doing, what this is all about. This is this totemic ritual, see. These folks don't really understand it, but I do. And they're invested in it, but you're kind of, well, see, that's what can happen sometimes, that you can so flatten out what's going on there or turn it into something else that it becomes essentially, has a very, very different meaning. Okay? So that's one of the things that can happen during this. And so it is not too uncommon for college students to come home and parade some of their new learning, you see, to their family. And their family kind of go, wonder what's going on here. Now, what may happen also as time goes on is there may be moves this follower to a sixth stage, which he calls conjunctive faith. He's using that sort of like the word conjunction, where you have like an and or a but, where you're linking two things together. And the nature of conjunctive faith is more, and he says this is unusual before middle age. And he says that by middle age, beginning for him at about age 35. Perhaps you would prefer not to say that it started that early. Anyway, he says age 35. Now, actually, though, I think that I've seen this in a college student, a young woman who is now I think 29 years old. What I saw her when she was probably 20, 21. But she is a person who had dealt with a lot of serious illnesses starting at about age 12. Life-threatening things, you know, where she went into the hospital not knowing whether she's going to come out alive, and that happened several times. And so this person had faced a lot very early in her life. And there was a kind of depth and maturity about her that was remarkable. Any case, conjunctive faith is one that, let's say, it tends to happen more in middle age, where you become aware that maybe the clear formulation of your faith that you'd have during stage five maybe doesn't quite fit things, that things are a little bit more mysterious than that. That there's things don't fit together, both in understanding ourselves and understanding the world, understanding God. That real life experience is more paradoxical than that, and so it may come to be that a person begins to appreciate and to be comfortable, you might say, in a sense. I mean, that is, they not put off or try to ignore these kind of elements that don't always fit together neatly in our understanding, but to be at ease, you might say, in the presence of mystery. Okay, that is more likely to happen then. Okay, the reason for talking about this is that Christian spirituality and involvement in church. And I said one of the factors that affecting affiliation and non-affiliation is family relationships, okay? A second factor can be what's happening in one's own faith development. You see, if we go through a transition from one stage to the next, if we go from transition between 4 and 5 or 5 to 6, those transitions are often difficult times. And they may last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, maybe longer. And they are sometimes triggered by very traumatic experiences. And it is not uncommon for people then during that time to drop out. Now, not everyone, because there are people who are loyalists. They continue to develop in their faith too, but they may continue to be within the community of the church, and they go through these transitions while remaining within the church, but, you know, kind of inwardly processing things differently. But for others, the transition from one stage to another may be a period in which that person drops out for a while, and it may be for an extended period. Now, other factors then contributing to perhaps non-affiliation or alienation from the church is hurt or disappointment by the church. Many people are hurt by the church. Sometimes that's a matter of if a kind of church in the large institutional sense. I think of, for instance, gays and lesbians today can feel very, very, very hurt by the church. Or back a few years, the turmoil that took place in the early 70s, very late 60s, early 70s in the Missouri Lutheran Church. And some people, you know, the conflicts that were there, the bitterness that came for many people, that some people were very, very hurt by some of those events. And that some of that's happening also today in the Southern Baptist Convention. And sometimes those hurts can be on kind of large scale like that. But also, the hurt by the church can be simply that one's parent or parents represent the church. And so one's experience of growing up about the church and maybe being forced to do this or whatever, somehow that experience, the links, the associations of church for a particular individual can be quite negative in his or her memory. In other cases, we can be disappointed. That is, the church simply didn't feed us, didn't meet our needs. The church itself has contributed here in a major way, I think. Another factor that contributes to alienation, I think, in our society, in our particular social situation, there's suspicion of all social institutions. I was trying to think earlier today, is there any major social institution in which there's a really high level of confidence in our society? I don't know. I mean, it used to be that, like, medical doctors were kind of looked up to as almost as gods, you know. And boy, that's tumbled down. I thought, well, maybe the U.S. Supreme Court. But that's only a part of the big legal institution. That there probably is still a high level of respect for the U.S. Supreme Court. But I don't know. I mean, it seems like just about every institution, there is this suspicion. And so, how could the church expect to come through this unscathed, somehow having great confidence in it? And then finally, I think another factor that contributes to distancing from the church is simply excessive self-sufficiency. That is to say, I get along just fine. I can manage my life. I don't need these other people. I maybe don't even need God. All of us, whether in the church or outside the church, I think, suffer from that. That's nothing new. It's nothing particularly connected with our period in time. I think that's something that's just there as one of the factors. So there's a number of factors here, I think, that influence affiliation or non-affiliation with the church. Maybe I'll just pause there and see if there's any comments or questions about any of that stuff. I'll leave it up there in case you want to. Yes?
I don't know. You haven't mentioned the Christian Broadcasting, for example. And in our own experience, my family, Sunday mornings, we listen to the Moody Church Hour.
Uh-huh.
We hear a great sermon from Pastor Luther. We hear fantastic Christian music. And we live in Olympia, Washington, and this is going on in Chicago, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of have an affiliation with the Moody Church.
Mm-hmm.
Daily, we listen to Jim Dobson.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck Colson. Chuck Colson in Washington, D.C., and Jim Dobson and Dr. Dobson in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Yeah.
So there's a sense that we have an affiliation and a relationship that, in fact, is more frequent, in many cases daily, with Christian Broadcasting than we have with our own church that's 15 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that, of course, Christian Broadcasting can reach people in convalescent centers, hospitals, and isolated communities, and they sense, based on contributions made to these organizations, an affiliation that they're willing to contribute to.
Yeah.
Financially.
Yeah.
So I sense that there can be even competition, but in some sense at a remove site that, hey, I listen to Moody. This
mm-hmm.
morning, why do I need to go to my church
mm-hmm.
when I can hear a fantastic mm-hmm. sermon and I'm not too thrilled by my own pastor?
Mm-hmm.
Or much better music on the radio or on television than what I experience in my own little country church.
Okay. Yeah. Any responses to that? Observation?
Well, there's one quick point. I think.
Can you speak up a little bit?
I think that's fine what he's doing. I agree. It's lovely to sit down and just relax and listen and really concentrate on the words, but you're not communing with your neighbors and your friends and extending your family.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Any other thoughts? To go further, that what she's implying, the church is community. I think it's very essential that you have community as well. If you can do that with broadcast, sure, fine.
If you can have a community through a broadcast, that's another way to have community.
Well, I'm saying I think it's more difficult to have.
Oh, I see. Okay. Right. Any other thoughts?
Well, I was also thinking about Christian broadcasting as we were going along. And I was thinking maybe, and a lot of the Christian broadcasting I've seen has probably done more damage to Christianity, to people that don't know anything about it, than a lot of things, from the wacky
mm-hmm.
stuff that's on there and the evangelists and all their stuff, you know, what's going on. I don't know.
The scandals.
The scandals and what have you.
It can, yes, that's true. That it can. Many people may have a kind of equation that Christianity is this. This is Christianity. And this is the only form of Christianity, and that could be a kind of narrow or one point on the whole spectrum of what is Christian. Okay?
I think if the uninitiated, unchurched people listen to the radio and get some knowledge from that, most people with any level of intelligence are going to go on from that and say, well, I need to express myself in a community of worshipers rather than just strictly at home on the radio or TV.
Yes?
I would just add that I think what would feel comfortable for me with Christian broadcasting is that there's some reciprocity involved where that as a listener, my needs are being met. And I don't have a viewpoint about Christian broadcasting because I don't listen to it. But I guess the worry that I would have is that those that are in convalescent centers, are their needs really being met? And if they are, then I'm okay with that. But I also am skeptical about some of, I think what you were saying, some of the scams and ways to make money through fundraising efforts that I'm not sure all individuals are really benefiting from.
Yes, Dan?
I'm wondering, does any of this research show differences in terms of gender or racial ethnicity kinds of issues? Do men and women have different stages of faith development or different levels of affiliation? Does this vary from African American to white to Asian American, Hispanic?
You know, maybe I just don't know the literature that well, but it doesn't seem to me that from what I recall from reading Fowler's stuff anyway, that it hasn't gone onto that next step to perhaps try to distinguish some of that stuff more carefully. But I would think anyway, at least with the gender thing, that there would have, I think if there had been significant differences, that would have shown up and Fowler would have taken account of it. But that's all I can say really on that, right? I'm not sure about that. Yeah. Because the family dynamics, for one thing, in some situations would be quite different, right? In some ethnic groups. I mean, family ties are much more close than in others.
Well, I know, for example, I have some Italian-American Roman Catholic friends, and they simply say to me, look, as much as I dislike the Pope, for me to leave the Catholic Church is leaving being Italian-American, is leaving my family. They are so closely enmeshed.
Yes, you're right.
You mentioned dropping out of the church. Came out of the World War II in 1946, and my brother, he had a wartime marriage and ended up in divorce. And he wanted to remarry, and the Lutheran Church wouldn't marry him. So he went to a Presbyterian church.
Mm-hmm.
And from there on, he became a Presbyterian minister. So I was wondering, when did the Lutheran Church quit this? They marry him now, but at that time they wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the Lutheran Church history that well, and I would hesitate to say whether it was actually. It would depend on which denomination you're talking about. Whether there was actually a denominational rule on this, or was it simply the local pastor? You see, there would be some variations. So you can't just say categorically the Lutheran Church has. And when did they change their position? But there's lots of sub things underneath that. Okay. Or did you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to make a comment, and it's been 15 years since, but I do remember reading Fowler. Uh-huh. And in part of this discussion, we're assuming that people move along in these stages of faith, whereas someone might stay that baby stage one, their whole life, and never progress developmentally. Some never reach the higher stages.
That's
they
right.
They just stay.
Yeah.
And so some of these things that affect you in life are, for one reason or another, going to make you stuck, or maybe you will move on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's right. Okay. Yes?
Is there any information on the impact of community on joining a church? What I'm thinking of is, in foreign missions, there's discussions about going to tribal groups and the whole tribe becomes Christian because the leader does or something. And I contrast that with my childhood when Sunday morning was, nothing happened. The stores were closed and there was no Little League, and the community reinforced or set aside Sunday morning as a time for Christians to worship, as opposed to today, when Sunday morning there's everything just like Saturday going on.
Yep.
And it's really not reinforced or culturally set aside for worship. Is there any sense that in, I'm guessing, small midtown or Midwest cities where there's nothing else to do, more people go to church on Sunday morning than in metropolitan areas of Chicago and the Midwest also?
Well, yeah, that would probably be true. In fact, I could give you an example of that. I guess it would be Pella, Iowa, which is in southeastern or south-central Iowa. It's a very Dutch town. And the dominant churches are Reformed Church of America or Christian Reformed, Christian Reformed being more conservative and having its own schools. Now, still, and this is a town which, this is where Pella windows come from, by the way. It has some major industries which are international businesses, so there's people who've moved in, you see, who aren't from that tradition. And I've stayed with a couple of those people. I've been down doing retreats there the last 2 years, so that's how I kind of got a window in there. And what happens is that you still don't mow your lawn on Sunday. This would, you know, it's part of just the ethos of the place, and these people who come in from outside. But yet, this was a family that were not from this Reformed tradition. They were Lutheran. They says, you know, I really like it. It's time for family. It's a real emphasis upon family. Now, that's being eroded, though. That's being eroded by the fact that, you know, there are some shop. Used to be that there was no grocery shop open. Now there is one that's been open the last couple of years, you see, and one that remains closed. But how long can you hold out? And then, you know, with Walmart coming in, being open on Sunday, this was a major change. So it is difficult. But there, yes, I think church attendance would be significantly higher than it would be in Oregon, for example. Sure. Let me ask you a question here, and this is a question I have asked with students sometimes, and it's interesting. I just want to see what kinds of answers you're going to come up with here. If a person wants to be a Christian, how important is it to participate in church? Answer with zero, terms of a number, 0 to 10. 0 meaning, well, it's not important at all. 10 meaning it's extremely important. Give you just a moment to figure that out, where you would register.
Does 10 mean that you can't be a Christian if you don't go to church?
It's up for you. I mean, I'm not going to try to define everything for you, okay? Because we'd be here endlessly, all right?
That's got the answer for the number by each individual that's sitting here in the room.
Right. So. But if it's extremely important, then that's a 10. 0 if it's not important at all, then it would be a 0. Okay. Okay. You got a number for. Okay. What I'll do is I'm just gonna look. Okay. Here we go. How many said 0? We're going 0 to 10 here. Okay. Nobody said 0. We got 0. How many said 1? Nobody said 1. How about 2? Still 0. 3. Anybody say three? Don't be afraid.
I'm not afraid. I would have to say that. Put me down as a one there on that three.
Oh, you're okay. All right. I'm sorry. All right. You reconsider. All right. All right. Four. How many said four? How many think four? Five. We got one, two. Okay. How about six? How many say six? Okay, we got one. How many say seven? One, two, three, four.
We got four, isn't it, I guess?
Eight. How many say eight? One, two, three, four. How many say nine? One, two, three, four, five, and six. Okay. How many say 10? One, two, three, four, and five. Okay. All right. All right. Well, let's start with the person who was brave enough to say three. Why?
I will say what I said originally, that each one of us puts the level of importance from his own individual perspective.
Yeah, I know, but I'm asking you what, why?
Everybody that answered nine, for example, why not 10? I can't quite understand that.
why not two for you?
I was having an odd with 0, 1, 2.
Okay. But would you be willing to say why? What are the reasons?
Why?
Yeah, why? What were one of the reasons for getting that number?
Well, you know, it does take two people to gather in his name.
Uh-huh.
That's what the Bible says. I guess you could call that church.
Okay.
But I, you know, beyond that, you know, in the broader sense, I don't see how you could say it's absolutely essential that church be there for you to be a Christian.
Okay.
Because I think you can believe a Christian belief and have no affiliation whatsoever with any church. And I think a lot of people in our country feel just that way today.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's not really what the question is.
That's not the question.
What is the question?
It says how important is it to you. It doesn't say whether or not you can be a Christian if you don't go to church. It just says how important is it. Those are two different things in my mind.
That's true.
How about some of you that answered, let's say, why did you answer a seven? Anybody want to volunteer to those of you who answered seven? Why did you answer it? Yes.
I guess what hit me was my brother.
Yeah.
Who does not attend church.
Uh-huh.
And I truly think he doesn't because he's lazy. But
that's because he's your brother.
it's just too much work on Sunday to get dressed and make the effort. It really is.
Okay.
But we had a stressful family meeting many years ago, and my father was so upset in this meeting that he blurted out something about my brother not going to church and thus was not a Christian.
Ooh.
And my brother said, I'm a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I believe. And my father never really quite heard me because he equated going to church with being a Christian and could not separate that out in any way. So there was no way I could say 10 because I think of my brother.
Okay. All right.
Now I think he's missing a great benefit.
Sure.
Which I get out of church, but if you label being a Christian, church is not what he seems to feel a need. He's in that self-sufficiency.
Okay. For those of you who answer, anybody? Oh, yes, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to respond to, I was a seven.
Uh-huh.
And my feeling is that you aren't a Christian just on Sundays, and your attendance in church doesn't label you that.
Mm-hmm.
You can do something as seeing, taking an invalid on a drive on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You can do all kinds of things like that, acts of kindness and community, and faith with them, and changeable ideas and reinforcement. And just sitting on a pew doesn't.
But I think that going to church is an important you witness to your neighbors that Christ is important to you. You witness to your family that it's important to you. And also feel it's very necessary to have Christian fellowship to nurture your faith,
mm-hmm.
along with your study and mm-hmm. listening to the sermons.
Mm-hmm.
So, as the question said, how important is it to participate? It's very important to me. And I was a nine, and the only reason that I would not go probably is because there would be no church around. I mm-hmm. would make every effort on a Sunday to be in church because it's important.
Okay, anybody else from that, or 9 or 10, yes?
Well, I put down 10 because I feel like participation in a church is not just getting your body to church on a Sunday, but it's supporting the whole community and everything that the church does and rebuilding the structure and everything else that goes along with being a member of a church.
Okay.
I was a 9.
Yes.
So I think that it's important to support the Christian community. And I think it's also important to not be lulled into complacency and to be challenged by other people in the Christian community. I think if you isolate yourself and read and only mull over your own ideas, it would be pretty easy to get quite complacent.
Jesus was in the tabernacle regularly.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for him to have that.
Mm-hmm.
I so say. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I see the 9, and I guess I feel church isn't a building only. I mean, we do in our culture, we have a building, but it isn't
yeah.
that. So when I'm thinking of church, I'm not thinking that it has to be a building. But I also, maybe I'm a dispensationalist, I think this is the church age. And Christ left that if we read the scripture and we look at it, this is the time he's done this for our benefit, that we get together, like you're mentioning, for fellowship, for teaching, so that we learn more about the word and how we should go out and reach the rest of the world. So it's a time that we need to come for those reasons. And I think he's done that for a good purpose,
mm-hmm.
and to get his work done and accomplished before he comes back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else?
Well, you may not want to go to church and be a Christian, but somebody has to go. Or it's not going to be there. If you don't pay those bills, the lights don't go on. If you don't pay those taxes, the property is gone. I mean, it's keeping the foundation of the actual structure there within society, so that the buildings and the institutions are there, so that people, when they want to go there, they'll come, and it's available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not feel like going, but.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just...
Okay, well, you first then.
I think we just have to go back and define what it means to be a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone has their own interpretation of what it means to participate in a church. And mm-hmm. so until we have commonality about what it means to be a Christian, I think it's hard to answer this question.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's a good question, right?
Yeah.
built in ambiguity, that's it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
My observation has been that those people who have had personal relationships with Jesus Christ but have not been involved in the church, their children have not become Christian. And without the social structure and the reinforcement of someone outside the family, the faith does not pass from generation to generation.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Well, I put myself somewhere between 3 and 8. I was going back and forth. And I would agree with most of what I've heard other people say here, but I also think that for some people, church has been so toxic and so painful and so destructive
mm-hmm.
that it's really important, not necessarily for the whole time, but for periods to be outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned gay and lesbian people. I mean, for gay and lesbian Christians, church has sometimes been such an overwhelming, negative, and painful
yeah.
experience.
Yeah.
I think for many women who feel called to ministry and are in churches that don't recognize that,
mm-hmm.
it's so painful that it's almost impossible to be a Christian in the church, and therefore there may be a period of separation that's necessary.
That's right. That's right. Well, let me just say something here. Did you want to say?
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
I put down 9. I'm a Roman Catholic by choice,
mm-hmm.
and I found it very interesting that our elder son was married in the church, and probably neither he nor his wife have gone maybe 5 times in 2 years, and yet he says well, the baby certainly has to be baptized.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, to me, Christianity is not some kind of mumbo jumbo. And if it doesn't mean enough to you to worship the way Catholic Christians worship, then I really don't understand, you know, why you're having the baby baptized. Mm-hmm. And I still don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they'll start. I said, we set the example by doing, taking. You know, we didn't just say go to church.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby won't go to church, I don't think, if, unless she has the example of her parents going.
Yeah, sure.
I can't fully agree with that. Grew up in the Catholic Church myself, and neither of my parents ever went to church, to my knowledge. It just, I just went. So I think it's all that I'm back to the individual. That's where I think I have the answer for you. The individual is important.
Well, I was going to respond to your comment about, yes, that it's important to define what it means to be Christian. I agree with that. But also important to define what you mean by church.
Yes.
See, that's one of the one of the very critical variables in how people answer this.
Yes.
Because if church means going to church, then that's, you know, that's kind of going there on Sunday morning, you see. That's what's the critical thing or the not critical thing. And I think most of us recognize that it's possible to be a Christian without going to church. Maybe not over a long, 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 long period of time. Probably at some point, maybe one would ordinarily want to do that. But there may be extended periods of a person's life that one doesn't do that. But in at least in the Lutheran tradition, church is defined basically as community. The church, here's the basic understanding of the church in the Lutheran tradition. The church is a community of believers among whom the word of God is proclaimed and the sacraments rightly administered. Okay, it's a community of people among whom these things happen. Now, it's not only, but the community is not there only when it's on Sunday morning when the word is being publicly proclaimed and the sacraments administered. The community is also there throughout the week. And so there is this, one can have, like you're somebody's brother. Well, I mean, the brother was within a family network, you see, where there is still probably, ongoing contact with members of the Christian community. So it isn't as though your brother is, certainly he doesn't go to church, but he's not outside the Christian community, it seems to me, in many ways. So, in another element in that, and I'll just make another comment and then you can respond to this. Another element that's been prominent in the Lutheran understanding of the church has been to talk about the priesthood of all believers. That, here's a quote. Now, unfortunately, what most people understand by that priesthood of all believers is mean, well, I don't need a priest to go to God. You know, I can go to God directly for myself. But that's not what the priesthood of all believers means. It doesn't mean that we're priests just to kind of minister to our own needs. This is an actual quote from Martin Luther. As priests, we are worthy to appear before God to pray for others and to teach one another divine things. A priest is not a priest for himself. A priest is a priest for himself and others. For others, you see. You're ministering to others. So, and this is what is important, I think, about the emphasizing church as community of believers and at this responsibility for nurturing one another's faith, for praying for one another, remembering, say, that person that we know who is perhaps alienated from the church at this period in his or her life. Remembering that person in prayer, keeping up contact, being the best example one can be, listening maybe to complaints and gripes about the church patiently, and and not defensively, et cetera, et cetera. That priesthood of all believers, I think, is immensely important today when there are a number of folks that, for many good reasons often, disenchanted at this point in their life with the church. So it's that community of believers, and that each one of us, and I think, has a very important role of ministry in that context. So
this may sound probably as a judgment statement, but I would say that there may be a community of believers, but there's varying degrees of richness of our faith that the church provides us. I'm not one to judge believers, but my experience has been when I'm in a community with other believers that richness comes through because of the teaching and the challenging questions that we give each other. If I'm walking alone, and maybe I have to do that to get through my own pain separate from the church, then I think that richness in my faith is probably not what it could be. If I would draw strength from other believers to get through my pain, then maybe I would come out of that sooner. But we can't do that for all believers, and I think that's where where I went back to how do we define Christians.
Sure.
And so I would say it makes a richer faith for us if we belong to a community.
Yeah, and that's where I don't know if some of you were here yesterday and we were talking about the issue of symbols, and that when you're trying to reach out to people who are unchurched, who don't have a church background, that maybe they're confused by it. They don't understand all these symbols, and they want to have things much more straightforward, whereas people who have been in the church perhaps, and maybe at a different level of faith development, for them, these symbols are rich. And so I think there's a need to kind of have diversity, being able to have the symbols, but also perhaps to be able to talk about them at times, to try to explain them to some extent with people who are perhaps beginners. And okay, sure. Any other comments? Got a few minutes here.
I think the community of faith is really important, but I think sometimes church is really not a community of faith. It's just a place where things happen. You know, it's not, it doesn't perceive itself as a community of faith. And so I think that maybe that's our challenge today, is to make sure that our institutional churches really are communities.
Well, yeah, the church is a complex phenomenon, of course. And a community, and it's real cozy often to talk about the church as a community of faith, you know. And there's a profound longing, I think, particularly in our individualistic society, is a profound longing for close community. However, no community can exist for very long without having some sort of structure, some sort of institutional form. And so that's
you can't have community without conflict.
Yeah, and you're going to have, yeah. I mean, so it's not going to be all sweetness. That's right. And there's it's true in families too. Sure, you know, there's conflicts often there. So it isn't all going to be cozy and sweet. Any other comments, thoughts on this question?
Well, I think in adding to what she just said, my husband came up to Holden this week for the first time, and I brought my kids last year for the first time. And after we went to the Eucharist service on Sunday, he said to me, "My goodness, that was the longest sharing of the peace that I have seen." And if you were at that service, it seemed longer than usual, and that gave him a clue that this was a sense of community in this service that we had. And in our home church, we do share the peace, and sometimes it's longer and shorter. It just depends on, I guess, how people are feeling at the time. But I think in response to what she is saying, when you see those symbols, or like, that's just what struck me as she said that, was the sharing of the peace the other night was so symbolic of what's going on here at Holden. And it's like, I want to go and take that home now. And can we have the sharing of the peace for, you know, to me it felt like 5 minutes. I don't know. It was a long time to watch that.
Well, yes.
And on the other hand, I don't know how many of you have seen the video of You've Got Mail. There's a culture through email now where we make community without contact. That's now possible very easily in our world. And how can the church enter that? You know, there are some churches that are beginning to address the needs and the requests of people by computer.
Oh, sure. Yeah, web pages, sure. You bet.
And so what can the church do to help those people who, that may be a great bridge, and it may be a great place to welcome people who aren't ready to set foot on the church property, but want to start asking the right questions or building a relationship.
And that's where the broadcasting dimension comes in too. I think it kind of reaching out. As long as there's, again, I think if there's an encouragement to kind of draw people into real lived community, that's a good balance. And there was something else I was going to respond to you, but I can't remember it now. it slipped my mind. Oh well. I think you will not be irreparably harmed. Well, our time is up, so thanks very much.
Thank you.